Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
And welcome to the program. So glad you have tuned in today. Here on Simple Solutions, Dr. Jennings always tries to be responsive to your mental health concerns. And he does that by speaking with callers during the show, as well as addressing emailed questions that arrive at commonreason.com. Recently, a listener sent an email concerning obsessive compulsive disorder in general and something called scrupulosity in particular, something she says has tormented her privately and silently for the past couple of years. Let's talk with Dr. Jennings about this disease and how he believes it can best be treated. Dr. Jennings, first, what is it?
This is a form of obsessive compulsive disorder in which individuals have this ruminations of some type of spiritual defect in which they feel guilty, spiritually inadequate. They can have intrusive thoughts in which they have blasphemous thoughts where they may think about God and then vulgar curse words in association with God. They may feel that they have somehow had a minor defect in, say, some ritual, and then they have to, and they feel that this is equally, for instance, they may forget a word in a Bible verse, and as they're reciting a Bible verse, and they would experience that forgetting one word in a Bible verse as equally offensive as committing adultery or murder. The intensity of guilt associated with that is just equally as horrible. So this real sense of religious or spiritual inadequacy, guilt, not measuring up, feeling worthless, this is the essence of scrupulosity.
And we mentioned the guilt part of this thing. We established on this program that a lot of the guilt that we feel is not necessarily from God, or is any of it from God. What's your answer to that?
Well, the guilt is associated with scrupulosity, and all OCD is inappropriate guilt. So it's not coming from the work of the Holy Spirit. It's coming from a combination of both biological defects, with brain defects, serotonin circuitry is involved, and also psychological misunderstandings and processes that contribute to this. So no, this type of guilt is inappropriate guilt, and it's and when it becomes destabilizing to the point that our function is impaired, it becomes a disorder.
Now, let's talk about the two areas here, the biological and physiological. Biological, is this something we're born with? Is it hereditary?
We are born with biological predispositions towards various disorders of all kinds. And generally, in order to have any of the mental illnesses, you have to have both a genetic predisposition and then environmental exposures that would cause that disorder to be manifest. And so depending on one's experiences, exposures, both physical exposures and psychological exposures, one may or may never develop these syndromes. So it's a combination of both environment and biology working together.
Of course, we've all been 6,000 years from the hand of the Creator, so I'm assuming that if we all have these predispositions, some are more developed than others in certain people?
We all don't have predisposition to OCD. We all have predispositions of various kinds. Some people have predispositions to depression. Some people have predispositions to OCD. Some people have predispositions to bipolar. Some people have predispositions to psychotic disorders. We all have vulnerabilities, and some people are more resilient, and it takes a lot more environmental stress to exhaust a person or bring a disorder about.
And then the other side of that, the biological, and then the psychology, is there something wrong with the brain? Is there something missing in the brain that causes it to happen?
Well, the data would suggest that people with obsessive compulsive disorder, including scrupulosity, do have brain circuitry issues. The serotonin circuitry is intimately involved, and most of the effective treatments of a pharmacologic nature involve the serotonin circuitry. And as I mentioned earlier, there have been certain forms of brain surgery that have been effective in severe cases of OCD, but those are only in very, very severe cases, because those are irreversible brain surgeries where they cut certain links from the left and right hemisphere.
Okay. All right. I think we're caught up now where we were before. Let me just swing right back here to the guilt question again. Dr. Jennings, we all feel guilty from time to time. Sometimes we feel very guilty. I know as a kid I would do something and I just couldn't sleep that night. I was really bothered by it. What is bothering me? What is causing me to feel that way?
It depends on the circumstance. Guilt can come from lots of different things. It can come from a dysfunction of neural circuitry or irrational beliefs that one holds, or it can come from actually engaging in behaviors that are immoral or so forth. So just a general statement, somebody's experiencing guilt, is not enough to actually ascertain why they're experiencing guilt.
So the first thing they need to ask themselves is this real guilt? Do I have a real reason to feel this way?
Well, again, for the person with OCD, they can't tell the difference.
The person
with OCD thinks their guilt is legitimate. They think this is something reasonable. They're having thoughts. They think about God, and they think about the most vulgar curse words you've ever heard, and then they feel guilty. Well, shouldn't you feel guilty if you call God those bad names?
Absolutely. But they're just thinking
absolutely.
About it,
absolutely. Should they really?
It.
Should they really? No, I don't think they should in this case.
If they were calling God those bad names.
But that's what their mind is telling them.
Okay. All right. So they, in their mind, because God can read the mind, they know that God is listening to this conversation they're having in their mind, so they feel guilty because they just said something really bad to God. I guess the question would be, is God disturbed by this? If we are sinful human beings and we're 6,000 years from the hand of the Creator, when we do something like that, does God get all bent out of shape about it?
God's primary concern is for our health and welfare. So if we were to do something like that, he's concerned as to the impact it has on us. He doesn't get offended or hurt or angry. He's only compassionate and loving. We see the woman who was caught in adultery. Jesus never got angry with her, upset with her. Neither do I condemn you. He didn't condemn you, but he was concerned for the impact such behavior is having upon her. So he told her, I don't condemn you, but hey, go live a better life. Stop doing this. You're destroying yourself.
All right, we're going to find out how to go live a better life here with Dr. Jennings on our program. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments, 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. We'll be back with Dr. Jennings in a minute, so stay right where you are.
Here's your Daily Heartbeat with Dr. James Markham.
Many days I talk to patients in the office and I try to give them a biblical prescription. They might be on all the right medications at the right doses, but I try to give them something new. And the biblical prescription I like to share with you today is, let's get outside and take care of the earth. You know, we were originally designed to take care of the earth, to take care of the plants, to take care of the animals. There's something that special happens to our chemistry when we do what God originally planned us to do. He originally planned us to take care of the earth we live in. We also know when we're outside, we activate a chemical, vitamin D, which helps change our chemistry for the good. So one of your biblical treatments for the day to change your chemistry is get outside, take care of the earth, take care of God's creatures, and you'll change your chemistry.
Thank you, Dr. Markham. If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
We live in a fast-paced, stressed-out world. Is there any way to escape life's intense pressure? Hi, this is Charles Mills, and I'd like to offer you some hope. From my office, I can look out and see the deep blue of the sky and the rich greens of the plants and trees. Scientists tell us that these colors foster a sense of peace and tranquility. Isn't it amazing that God would create the world with a built-in stress reliever for our troubled minds? In a similar way, our wise Creator has designed a spiritual refuge for us. It's found in taking time each day to immerse ourselves in His Word. I'd like to offer you a free series of Bible study lessons that can help you establish a pattern of daily Bible study. It's called Discover, and you can receive the first of these beautiful lessons by calling 800-775-4673. Color your world with messages of hope, peace, and assurance. Ask for Discover when you call 800-775-4673.
Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments to Dr. Jennings, 800-775-4673. Dr. Jennings, this email that we received from a listener, here's what she says. I began going to cognitive behavioral therapy sessions and found it really difficult to do the activities they're asking me to do. And then she outlines the concept for the scrupulosity. The concept of her therapy sessions was, one, you have a thought. Two, you feel that the thought is bad. Three, because you have a bad thought, you feel guilty and ashamed. Four, to stop the thought, you come up with a ritual or rituals, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And then five, the rituals keep the thought away for a short term, but then six, the whole cycle repeats. That doesn't sound like this is working too well for her, Dr. Jennings.
Well, I think that's what they were describing. She's describing here the cycle before she went to therapy. This is what the cycle of the scrupulosity is. You get the intense thought, you get guilty, you do a ritual, you feel better briefly, and then the whole thing starts over again. So she's not describing the therapy. She's describing the process of the unhealthy ritual and obsessive thinking.
So they identified this, and then they would suggest some rituals. What kind of rituals could you suggest?
No. They're not suggesting rituals. Rituals are part of the dysfunction. People do rituals as part of the disorder.
Oh, I see. Okay. In other words, they have this thought. They don't want to think about it, so they...
They might do a Hail Mary. They might recite a Bible verse seven times. They might crawl on their knees up the Vatican stairs and kiss every step. Okay. I mean, they do a ritual to try to cleanse themselves from the unhealthy thought.
I see. Okay, so the ritual is not part of the therapy. The ritual is what they do internally to try to keep this thing from happening.
Right.
All right, so here she is, and it doesn't help any. She says, in the CBT, I was told that the way to counter my faulty thinking was through exposure therapy, by forcing myself to have bothersome thoughts. What is that talking about?
She's describing that in therapy with some OCD syndromes, somebody say has an obsession and fear about, say, germs. One of the treatments for that in traditional OCD is to expose persons gradually to the situations that they ruminate and obsess about until they actually are deconditioned and they realize, hey, there is really no danger here, and the anxieties and stresses eventually go away and they stop ruminating about it. So exposure therapy is one way to deal with a traditional obsessive compulsive disorder. So she's telling us that she was told that she should actually think more about these negative thoughts, and until she just becomes so used to them, they don't stress her anymore. That's what she's, but she said, by forcing herself to actually think of the things that she finds distressing.
All right. And she said, however, I feel uneasy about purposely uttering evil things against God in my mind to overcome the disease. And she said, therefore, I dropped the CBT and decided that I would use other techniques to overcome it, including Bible reading, prayer, fasting, just affirming that God is God of love and will not condemn me. Aren't these rituals that she's doing here?
Exactly. These are some of the rituals that actually can perpetuate the disorder. Okay. So, of course, in a healthy spiritual development, there's all these things are appropriate. Bible reading, prayer, fasting can be helpful, and focusing on God's character of love. All these things are helpful and beneficial in a healthy journey with the Lord. But these things can become in themselves part of the dysfunction if the reason we're doing them is to somehow combat irrational thought processes, and it becomes part of the obsessive ritualing.
Wow. I believe I know some people who are doing this very thing, and maybe they have this problem. Okay, then she goes on. The issue is that I have my moments where the thoughts come back and they bother me. I have to keep reassuring myself that God is love, but I was wondering if there are any other tools that you could give me, and any other silent sufferer, to overcome this illness. Then she says, I feel really ashamed to talk to anyone about it, like pastors and friends, and only my husband knows, but he is not 100% convinced that it is real. Ouch. As he can't really hear the thoughts that I have. Also, would medication help in this situation? Dr. Jennings, she is asking you for help.
Yeah. First off, I hope your husband's listening. And if not, this show will be being recorded and will be available on our website. And you go find it and make him listen, because I'm going to speak to your husband now. This disorder is real. This disorder is a neurobiological, psychological process. Your wife does not voluntarily choose to have these problems, and it takes real treatment, both a often pharmacologic as well as psychological treatment, to actually reverse this process and get some victory over it. So, yes, let's be supportive and encouraging of your wife to get this. It's not her fault she's having it. I mean, think about this disorder. This disorder is a disorder that is based on some type of inadequacy and guilt, that you're not good enough, and you're worthless, and you're spiritually defective, and now you're having your closest intimate contact telling you that, hey, this isn't even real, you're making this all up. So that only entices, or you should get over this, or why can't you just ignore it, which only says, oh, there's something wrong with me, I should be able, it just inflames the guilt even more. So
sure.
So, okay, so it's real. Question about the medication. Yes, I recommend first then you go to a good psychiatrist and you disclose the obsessive ruminations that you're having and any rituals that you've found yourself doing, and you get on some medication. I can't tell you exactly which medication will work. I can tell you the best medication is the one that works. So you find the one that works for you, and there's a wide variety of medicines, and some work well for one individual and don't work for another, and vice versa. So the medicine that you want to get on, and you may have to go through several before you find one that really works well and doesn't have significant side effects for you, but you definitely want to get on a medication of some sort. I have multiple patients with this disorder, and with medications and with both therapy, they actually have significant improvement where they stop having these ruminations. The other aspect I want to talk about, though, is this is cognitive therapy, exposure therapy. In my opinion, exposure therapy is not a proper treatment for the scrupulosity. This idea of focusing on the negative ruminations is not helpful for this type of OCD. In general, the OCD types things with germs and contamination and other types of obsessions. Exposure therapy can be quite helpful, but I don't think it's that helpful in this particular condition. When people have a rumination that they're not good enough for God, or God looks at them and they feel condemned by God, to focus more on how they feel condemned is not really going to be helpful, because there is no way to actually in reality prove that they're not condemned by God. Whereas with germs and things like that, you can actually have them exposed to it and realize, hey, nothing bad happens here, and the reality can help counter their obsessive fears. So in the scrupulosity, I think the exposure therapy is not the right direction. So I want to affirm you in disengaging from that process. You made the right choice.
Okay, what exactly do these medicines that you're talking about do? How would they help her? What are they disconnecting something? Are they enhancing something? What are they doing in the brain?
Well, you know, it's unclear. Actually, if you look up the data on them, we know some of their sites of action, but the full consequence in this particular disorder and why it helps decrease ruminations has not been fully elucidated. What they do is they increase serotonin in some parts of the brain. They calm the fear circuitry of the brain, and this may be their number one action, because people with OCD, this is a anxiety disorder. This is a disorder based on fear and insecurity. And so the fear circuits may be overly active and may be firing inappropriately. And by calming them, we can reduce the initiation of some of the stimuli that causes these symptoms in the first place.
If someone lived in Zimbabwe and they had no access to this kind of wonderful medical care available, what can they do? To just live with it?
They may suffer their whole life. That's exactly right. They may suffer.
Yeah.
Look in history, there are people who have been thought to have OCD, Loyola, Ignatius, Saint Ignatius or Loyola, who was the founder of the Jesuits, was considered by many to have this disorder. Martin Luther, who was the founder of the Reformation, was considered to have this disorder by many. Because if you have read the writings of Luther and know the history of it, he obsessed constantly about his inadequacy, and he did all these rituals to try to cleanse himself, and it was never good enough. And he wrote about how one minor mistake was the same as murder or rape or anything like that. So many consider that some of these great reformers had these conditions as well. Others say that, well, you have to look in the historic context, and the historic context, that many of the people at that time were very scrupulous in their living, and the culture was very scrupulous, so this really wasn't that far of a deviation.
Yeah, I can understand that. This brings me to an important point, and when I talk with you on this program, Dr. Jennings, it reaffirms that there are those, probably some in the listening audience right now, who think, medicine bad, natural good. Well, sometimes we are living in such a way, 6,000 years from the hands of the Creator, that the Creator has had to make some unnatural ways for us to get better. And he may have led the scientists and the doctors who put together these medicines to bring about healing in our brain. I know it's unnatural. It's out of the ordinary. We're living on a wrong track. I know that. But I think God comes to us and finds us and helps us where we are. Am I on the right track with this, Dr. Jennings?
You know, I'm not really that comfortable with the whole unnatural thing. I mean, it's unnatural that mankind is in sin.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
The natural order of the universe is that we're in perfect harmony with God's kingdom. That's the natural order of the universe. Our entire existence right now is unnatural. It's out of sync with the way God has designed his universe to run. And so, you know, what we do here on earth, you would say, is it natural for someone to take a knife and cut open somebody's belly and remove their appendix? Okay, but when somebody has appendicitis, you go, I know it's unnatural, but, yes, of course you would say that's unnatural in a strict definition. It's not natural to be doing that to someone, but does that not mean it's appropriate, healthy, redemptive, healing, saving in its action? And so, so I don't like the moniker of unnatural because it only would inflame the scrupulosity of people. Okay, now I've got to do unnatural things to try and deal with this disorder, so I'm going to have more guilt. And so I think that's not very helpful to use that term. No. I think that what we say is that, in this disorder, we do what is reasonable, what is healthy, what is fact-based, what is evidence-based, what is truth-based. And the facts and evidence of science would tell us that these interventions are helpful in restoring a balance that reduce and remove these inappropriate and pathologic symptoms.
And I am so glad that there is a God of love who is guiding people like Dr. Jennings and the scientists that come along that really help us get back to where we want to be in our minds and our bodies. That's good news for sure. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments on this or any topic as we continue our program today. 800-775-4673 is the number. 800-775-4673. And I also want to invite you, listener, to stop by Dr. Jennings' website, www.comeandreason.com. You can read Dr. Jennings' blog. There are program archives. Like he mentioned, you can listen to past programs, other resources like his book, Could It Be This Simple? And if you are a Facebooker, 500 million of us, if you are a Facebooker, become a fan of Come and Reason, and you will enjoy something that I look at every week when I visit the site. And that is Dr. Jennings is busy doing some paraphrasing of the Bible, some of the wonderful texts that God has made available to us. He has clarified those through paraphrasing to make sure that we get the full meaning of what God had in mind when he said those things or when the people wrote those things. You'll enjoy that very much. That's for our Facebookers. It's not on the regular website. It's on the Facebook site. So become a member of Facebook and go to Come and Reason. We will return with Dr. Jennings in just a minute, so don't go away.
And now, a parable big change moment. A little boy pulled out his crayons and a sheet of paper one afternoon, and resting his chin on his hand for a few moments, he began sketching. Noticing his intensity, his mother asked, "What are you drawing?" And without looking up, he replied, "A picture of God." His mother smiled, "But honey, no one knows what God looks like." "Well, they will when I finish." We smile at that story, but isn't it true that we long to see God and know him? No one knows what he looks like, but through his life and words, the Nazarene sketched an illustration of his father. He drew a picture so we would know who our Father in heaven really is. We're like that little boy with his crayons. Through our words and deeds, we're sketching a picture for all to see. Our life should portray what God looks like.
A parable, big change moment from Johnny Erickson Tata's book, 31 Days Toward Intimacy with God. Parable.com.
Paralyzed Veterans of America ensures our veterans get all the benefits they deserve.
For helping me get back into life, thank you, PVA. I couldn't have done it without you.
They work to break down barriers for all Americans with disabilities.
It's great to have a career and take care of my family. Thank you, PVA, for making our world more accessible.
In the last 25 years, researchers have made great progress in finding a cure for spinal cord injury and disease.
Thank you, PVA, for funding research to find a cure for paralysis. Thank you, PVA, for protecting my civil rights.
For your sports and recreation programs.
For helping with my VA benefits.
To learn how you can help Paralyzed Veterans of America, call toll-free 1-866-USA-4-PVA or visit pva.org.
Thank you, PVA, for your service to America.
Thank you, PVA.
Thank you.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings.
And welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills, here with Dr. Jennings, and we are answering an email that came to commonreason.com. I want to invite you, listener, if you have a question that you would like to have addressed on this program, you can simply email that to radio@comeandreason.com. You can also leave your message on Facebook at Come and Reason and also at www.comeandreason.com. We want to hear from you because this program is here to bring you healing through Dr. Jennings' ministry. That's comeandreason.com. If you have a question for today's program on this or any topic, we're open. We like to go where you want to go. Our phone lines are open at 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. Dr. Jennings, returning now to the email that we received from a listener, she said that she was suffering from scrupulosity. We've talked about that for the first part of the program. She mentioned some of the therapy that she went to, and then you said there may be a better way. You said, besides exposure therapy and in addition to medication, what can she do to help herself?
Yeah, she needs to get in with a good psychiatrist / psychologist who can do psychotherapy with her. That is something other than exposure therapy. This is going to be very beneficial to her in helping her overcome these ruminations and obsessions in addition to the medication. So combination of medication and psychotherapy, and to confront these obsessions and ruminations with facts and truth. One thing that she said she was doing, which I think is definitely helpful, is to spend much time focusing on the truth about God's character of love as revealed in Christ. What will inflame scrupulosity is when one holds a punitive God construct. One holds a God who is very rigid, is a taskmaster, who is a judge, who sits up to look at us for the purpose of finding right and wrong, for the purpose of judging and punishing. If that's the God concept one holds, you can imagine that's going to significantly inflame scrupulosity. If one has scrupulosity and feels all these inadequacies, feels all these defects, but the God concept they hold is that God is a God who is like a loving, gentle physician, and he is examining them like a physician is examining a patient with an illness to find what's wrong so he can fix it. While they still may feel that they have problems and they're inadequate, the fears and insecurities will go down because they know God is looking to help heal and fix what's wrong rather than trying to punish them because they've got something wrong. And that changes the pressure and the dynamic, because when you're sick, when you're actually physically sick and you know you're sick and you know you got all these problems and you go to the doctor, you place yourself in the doctor's hands and you say, I know I can't fix myself. I can't get myself well. You know, I'll follow your instructions, but hey, search me, find what's wrong with me. This is what you find David in Psalms 51. Search me and see the wicked way in me, O Lord. Create me a new heart and renew your right spirit within me. That we have, even though we may have this sense of inadequacy, when we change our God construct, then we actually can experience a sense of peace because we know, yes, we're inadequate. We're what a wretched man and I am, as you quoted earlier, but now we're in the hands of the one who will fix us, and we don't have this pressure to go out and do these rituals to fix ourselves.
You know, you mentioned the woman taken in adultery. We've talked about that story on the program before, and it is such a joy that any time I feel that God is not happy with me and God is trying to you know, I think of that story. I also think of Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was up in that tree. Here was a known sinner. He robbed from God's people. He was a tax collector. And what did Jesus do with Zacchaeus when he came down on the tree? He went to his house to have supper. That's the kind of God we're dealing with here. One that doesn't condemn. One that just loves to be with us, to interact with us, even though we're sinners. And you know, something changed when Zacchaeus spent that time with God, because the Bible says he was going to give all the money back. And his life was changed. So there's a lot of change that can take place when we get to know the real God, the God that is a God of love. And that's the message you give to us every week, Dr. Jennings.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some other things that can potentially be helpful. General stress management. You see, when people have an anxiety disorder like OCD, if they're stressed about other things in life that have nothing to do with the scrupulosity itself, generally what happens is it inflames the obsessive symptoms. So if they were to be in a relationship in which there's argument and fighting going on, you can be sure that as they're stressed about that they will have increasing ruminations about what they did wrong, about how they're inadequate, about how they're no good. This type of thing will get worse. If they're having problems with work stress, if finances are no good. So learning how to cope and manage with just the vicissitudes of life and life stress is very helpful. One, again, a spiritual intervention here, learning how to say, oh, you know what, my responsibilities are for making decisions that are the healthiest I know how to make with the information I have at hand, and then trusting God with how things will turn out. How it turns out, I don't know. What happens that increases our anxieties and frustrations is when we take upon ourselves this sense that, hey, it's up to us to make things turn out a certain way. I've got to make sure I do everything right so it'll turn out this way or that way, rather than saying, wait a minute, how it turns out isn't up to me. What's up to me is what decision I'll make with the information I have at hand. Other things that can be helpful, aerobic exercise, which can increase calming brain neurotrophic factors and hormones, can have a calming effect and reduce and help with stress management. Of course, stable sleep-wake cycles are very important, because as we get good, sound sleep each night, it helps the prefrontal cortex and we can have a more calming effect there. We need to avoid stimulants. Stimulants can make this much worse. Caffeine. If somebody's a heavy caffeine user, several cups of coffee a day with OCD can make the ruminations and anxieties much worse. So we want to avoid things like caffeine. And certain over-the-counter medications, cold medications, and some of those medications can have a stimulant like ephedrine and things like this in it, which can also aggravate and worsen the symptoms. So we want to look at all those elements as well. And these can be helpful things. So we've got prescription medication to treat OCD. We've got exercise, sleep stabilization, good psychotherapy, avoiding stimulants, avoiding medicines that can make it worse. All these things can be beneficial, and aerobic exercise.
Mm-hmm. All right. I know you don't like dealing with general statements here. What can a person be over this in a year? Can they be over it in 6 months? Can someone look forward to healing rapidly, or does it take a lifetime?
People can have the ruminations and the intrusive negative thoughts remit in a day if they get on the right medication.
Wow.
Okay,
wow.
It can be like throwing a switch for some people. Some people with this disorder, you put them on the right medicine and it just knocks it out for them. And then what happens is, people, there's another element I just want to mention. There's the obsessive rumination based on the disorder. And then, because we've done something so long, there can be a secondary learned response, habit-like response, that we just do because that's what we're familiar with doing, and it's not even being driven by the obsessive disorder anymore. It's just something we turn to because that's what we do in those circumstances. That can be broken by the psychological interventions and therapies that teach us new ways to cope when we're stressed. So.
All right. Dr. Jennings, what are some of the other ways that obsessive compulsive disorder manifests itself? We've seen movies, I think, what was that movie? It was called As Good As It Gets. And the guy had this, everything had to be in a certain order, everything had to be lined up, everything had to be done a certain way. Is that generally the way it works? Do we see it like that?
It's a wide range of different disorders. People can have obsessions and or compulsions. You don't have to have both. And they can be about germs or cleanliness issues. Some people obsess about numbers, and they get stuck on certain numbers. And some people have counting rituals where they have to count everything that they see. They're going down the road, they have to count every telephone pole in their way where they're going. Some people have avoidance compulsions where they have to avoid certain things or certain behaviors. Some people have compulsions where they have to tap their door 7 times before they close it, or they have to open and close it 7 times before they leave. Some people have compulsions or obsessions about leaving things turned on in their house, or and this time they have to go back and they have to check and checking compulsions. So it's a wide variety of different manifestations, but the underlying root is intrusive, obsessional thoughts that are dysphoric in nature, and then you can have compulsions that one feels compelled to act out.
Okay, as you say these things, I'm thinking about myself, of course, and I'm thinking like my listeners are thinking, you know, do I have this problem? All of us have rituals in our lives. You're saying that when these things become intrusive, that's the problem, right? When it actually disrupts the flow of life. Am I the right track?
When you can't volitionally choose to simply avoid a particular ritual and move on, when you feel compelled and it interferes with function, we actually have rituals because rituals bring order, bring structure, allows us to go through a certain flow. Get up in the morning, you have a ritual of going into the bathroom, shaving, brushing your teeth, taking your shower, taking your vitamins, and moving on. And you have a certain ritual you go through. There's nothing wrong. That's not obsessional in nature. You could get up and there's a different day. It's Christmas morning and you don't shower. You go out in your pajamas for Christmas morning and you can, with ease, without any fear or anxieties, do that. You can change your rituals. There's no disorder there. So rituals in themselves are not a disorder. Many of us in our spiritual life have certain rituals that we enjoy participating in because it reminds us and elevates our mind to think about spiritual themes. This is not a disorder. The rituals that are disordered are when they're compulsive in nature and they're dysphoric, and if you don't do them, you get increasing anxiety and paralysis of function.
All right. Okay. 800-775-4673. I enjoy this program very much. 800-775-4673. Let's go to California and talk to Lily. Hi, Lily. What's on your heart today?
Thank you for taking my call. I have recognized different disorders in me since I've gotten older, and I've learned to cope with them. But one that I seem to have, I've recognized in both of my sons, and that is when I get under stress, I run to the computer, play games. I did this when my husband was sick, and I've always felt guilty about it. I still do it if I get bored or lonely or whatever. I waste time on the computer, and I'm not supposed to waste time. I have one son that does that with the computer, and the other one does it with sports on TV.
How much time do you spend on the computer, Lily?
Way too much.
How much?
Maybe 3 hours.
How often?
I do it every day, but not 3 hours every day.
Right. So every day, maybe an hour every day?
Yeah.
Okay. And why do you think that's too much?
Because there's so many other things I should be doing.
So do you think the problem is that you spend time on the computer, or the problem is you feel guilty for spending time on the computer?
I feel guilty playing the games.
Yes, and so is the problem playing the games, or the guilt that you experience for playing the games?
Well, I've excused it because games are good for the brain, but when I spend 3 hours or more, that's ridiculous.
I guess it depends on the other aspects of things that are going on. If you spend 3 hours or more while you have young children that are hungry and you're not feeding them, if you have spent 3 hours or more while you have a husband who is disabled and can't go to the bathroom and you let him, languish in his circumstance, then you might say, yes, I'm spending too much time. Are you neglecting the other responsibilities of life to the extent that you're playing these games, or are you using free time that you actually don't have a significant responsibility to play the game?
I'm 77, and I live alone, and I try to keep myself busy with other things, but then I get bored.
Okay. And so it sounds to me like rather than sitting around and doing nothing, you've engaged in an activity that you say exercises your neural circuits, which is a very important thing to do to keep our brains active and healthy. So it seems to me that from what you've described so far, the concern is more along the lines of why you're feeling guilty for doing it. I haven't heard that you're neglecting life's responsibilities and that this has become an imbalanced situation, but there's some idea in your mind that I shouldn't be playing games on the computer.
Well, as I said, my sons have it too, and they do it to the extent they do neglect their spouses.
Oh, so now maybe you're feeling responsible for what your son is doing?
Yeah.
Ah.
If it's neurological or whatever that word is.
So why don't we go to break and we're not going to break. Okay, we just took a break out. I thought we were about to go to break. Okay. Okay, our technician just took the break out. Great. So you say you're feeling responsible for what your son is doing.
Yes.
Who has God given you authority to govern?
Myself.
Then why are you taking the responsibility upon yourself for the governorship of your son?
Well, if it's a physical problem, then maybe I can tell him.
You can tell him what?
If something's wrong with their brain, if something's wrong with mine, and something's wrong with theirs, then I can tell him.
Yes, you could suggest that to them, and then they could evaluate it in their own judgment and come to their own conclusion. From what you've told me so far, though, the problem seems to me not the game playing, but the inappropriate guilt that you're putting on yourself.
Okay. So then how do I get rid of that guilt?
In this particular case, it seems to me that you have to bring some truth into bear and evaluate the reasons why you believe what you're doing is inappropriate. Sounds to me you've looked at your son's lives and you see that their marriages maybe aren't as ideal as you would like to see them, and you have identified a potential threat to their marriage, which is their game playing, and you've wanted as a loving mom to reach in and fix their marriage and have identified the fact that you play games as some contributing factor to the reason they play games.
When they were growing up, I didn't play games.
I'm sure you didn't, but this is the connections that you've articulated here. And I think you're looking for some way to fix your son's lives.
All women do that.
Yeah, that's what I heard anyway. It sounded to me like you're saying that they're playing games too much and their marriages are suffering.
So there's nothing I can do to help them.
You haven't been given authority to make decisions in their life, and I suspect if they're not spending time with their wives because of game playing, their wives have already communicated to them their dissatisfaction on this issue, and they're already aware of the fact that this is going on. So what do you think you could do to help them? You can't make decisions for them.
I write down a lot of scriptures and thoughts, but I never give it to them. They read the Bible themselves.
Mm-hmm. So you could have a conversation with them. You could share your heart with them. But then ultimately, don't you have to leave them free to make up their own decision?
Yes.
Yes. And so I think that's what you do. If you see an area in which a loved one is engaged in an activity that you believe is harmful to them, to go to them in a loving way and just say, from an observer's point of view, I'm concerned that this is something that might not be healthy. And I'm not telling you how to live your life, but I just wanted to share with you because I love you and I want you to be happy. And I'd like you to consider this. And I think that's certainly reasonable.
Okay. I'll see if I can do that.
Yes, yeah.
I try not to interfere with their lives, but...
And it could be presented as a way of interfering, but I think if you present it in an altruistic way, that you're just concerned for them, you're not telling them what to do, and you're going to leave it with their judgment, I think that could be heard very nicely. But as far as you're concerned, your responsibility is to, you know, live your life in harmony with the principles that God has led you to understand, and not try and take upon yourself the responsibility for how someone else's life turns out. You can't determine that.
Then I'll just pray that God will send somebody that can reach him.
Anything else I can help you with today, Lily?
No, thank you.
All righty. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Lily. 800-775-4673 is our phone number, 800-775-4673. Where do we get the idea, Dr. Jennings? Where is it written that we can't play video games for 3 hours, or we can't go for a walk in the woods for 3 hours, or we can't sit and watch television for 3 hours without feeling guilty. Why do we have this problem? What are we supposed? What do we think we're supposed to be doing during that 3 hours?
I think there's I can't speak for what other people think, but I've watched and I've heard people talk about that time, just like money, is a commodity that we've been given, and we will be held accountable for our use and how we spend our resources, whether that be time resources or money resources. And if we go and squander our money in gambling, then, you know, that's not a good thing, and we will be held accountable. I've heard this presentation, and likewise with our time. The problem with that is that there are necessities that our minds need for recreation, for decompression, for stepping away from the stresses of life and allowing one's mind to unwind, to relax on activities that are non-stressful, whether that's playing some video games, whether that's listening to some music, whether that's going for a walk, whether that's reading a book, something to decompress. Now, if you escape life's responsibilities, if you run away into your fantasy world of movies, books, video games, whatever it is you're doing that for the purpose of avoiding life. I have patients who do this by napping. They go to bed and they sleep so they can dream about a better world than the one they live in. And so they're avoiding life's responsibilities or avoiding making changes to make their circumstance better. That, of course, is unhealthy. But for those who are meeting life's responsibilities, but they get fatigued, they get tired, and they need simply time to rest and recover so they can then pick themselves up and go on and re-engage life's responsibilities, then some of these activities can actually be very adaptive and helpful.
Because what I heard from her was a feeling of guilt over doing. We are just a guilty people, and I'm trying to figure out, Dr. Jennings, where that comes from. You're explaining it so beautifully here. What is the source of that kind of guilt?
Well, it could be a biological imbalance in a brain. Okay, it could be the scrupulosity thing that no matter what you do, it's always wrong. It could be a biologic imbalance. That's one possibility. It could be because we have a false value set system in our brain, a false idea. When we believe a lie, then, for instance, classic guilt, people who are ruled by guilt have certain absolutist ways of thinking. I should do X. Okay, now there's how much room for compromise is there? I should drink water every day. Now, one could drink juice or tea or something else. It doesn't have to be water, but if one has the idea I should drink water and you don't, then there's condemnation. I should have done it and I didn't. So most of life's shoulds, or I ought to have, this is an absolutist. And it automatically brings guilt in the wake because of the absolute standard we've raised in our mind, which is usually a distortion. Most of life situations are coulds. I could have drank water, but I didn't because I wanted juice today. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You see the difference?
Yes. Should we change the should to will? Is that one way of taking care of it? I will drink water. I will go to bed early. I will do this.
Thing.
No.
No, I think the I will follow a path of what I understand to be healthy and reasonable. I will be reasonable. I will be open to and I will be flexible. The things that lead to guilt is rigidity. There's only one way to do it, and if we don't do it that way, then we're wrong.
Okay. All right. And that brings us right full circle back to our feelings and our relationship with God. We think that God is a rigid God, inflexible, and he has set out these laws that we're supposed to live by, and that's true to a certain point, but we take it too far. Am I on the right track?
I think, again, much of the spiritual guilt that is not neurobiologic dysfunction is based on distortion. Distortion in our belief about God. How would you, again, feel if you believe that there's a cosmic policeman in the sky following you constantly? I mean, when you're out driving in the city and a cop pulls in behind you and begins following you around, what emotions start coming up?
You feel guilty, and you...
You haven't done anything, but you start worrying, you start feeling stressed, and you start feeling guilty. And he's following you. You turn left, he turns left behind you, and you turn right, and he's still following you. And 5 minutes later, he's just right on your tail. You start sweating, you start getting stressed. Why? Because he's not there to help you. He's there to do something to you, right? That's how we feel. It's going to pull you over, give you a ticket, something. Okay? Well, this is how we view God, and he's got his angels following us to record every bad thing, and it's going to be in the record, and blah, blah, blah. Then this is a reason why many people feel the stress, worry, guilt, and this is why they're hyper scrupulous. They're watching every little thing, because when that cop's on your tail, don't you immediately start scrutinizing? Okay, or am I using my signal if I turn? I want to make sure that, do I have a brake light out? And did I register my car? Is my license plate on right? Blah, blah. I mean, isn't it immediately that you start becoming very, very vigilant over everything you're doing?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, people who have this view of God become hyper-scrupulous. They begin looking at every little thing they do and begin worrying it's not good enough. Maybe I left my signal on too long. I turned my signal on a quarter mile before I actually turned, or I didn't turn it on soon enough, and all this types of irrational ruminations because you fear the consequence and you have to be just perfect. Well, this is very, very classic with people who have the policeman in the sky God concept.
So you look in the rearview mirror and you see God behind you. What is he? What in your estimation would we have a better picture of him?
Lance Armstrong in the Tour de France. And as he's going to the Tour de France, he's got a car with his crew follow him everywhere he goes. And what are they there for? If he has a flat, they're there to prepare the tire. If he falls and injures himself, they're going to repair and get him back on the road. God is following us to assist, to restore, to strengthen, to provide. He's there watching out to protect. If someone has tried to do us harm, they'll intervene with his shield of protection. I mean, God is following us for sure, but not to get us, to protect us and help us.
Oh, my. What a wonderful message for us today as we move into the Christmas season here. By the way, we should just say Merry Christmas to our listeners. Dr. Jennings, would you like to give them a little Christmas message today?
I didn't even think about that, Charles.
I know. We want to say Merry Christmas. Because as we move around, as we do our stuff, as we're busy in the Christmas season, sometimes we begin to lose sight of what's important in our lives, and that kind of guilt sort of takes over, and we think I just want to say relax, people. This is Christmas time. Jesus came and was born here. Let's enjoy this Christmas season in a relaxing way, and let's listen to Simple Solutions every week and enjoy that, too. Also, let's get on our computers, and I would invite Lily to do this. I'll visit comeandreason.com. Use the computer other than games for a little bit. And
there's actually a program on my website under the media menu, Healing the Mind, on how to resolve appropriate and inappropriate guilt. It's free audio file, MP3 file for download, and I encourage Lily and others who are struggling with guilt to listen to that program.
All right, very good. That's at comeandreason.com on the website, comeandreason.com. If you are a Facebooker, again, we invite you to visit Come and Reason, become a fan. You know how to do that. If you're a Facebooker, become a fan, and you can read messages from Dr. Jennings as well as his wonderful paraphrase of the Bible as he's working through it, different chapters and passages that he's paraphrasing to make it crystal clear what God is trying to say to us, wonderful ways. And you're not going to find a punitive God there. You're going to find the Lance Armstrong car behind you, following you around. And I love that illustration, Dr. Jennings, very, very much. Well, our time has slipped by. Again, I want to remind you listeners that you can go to the website and leave a question for an upcoming show, just like our listener did today. I want to thank that listener very much for sending that question in so we can make a program with it. And we invite you to do the same thing, too. You can email us at radio@commonreason.com. Well, until next week, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. Timothy Jennings inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.